Well, a weakness and a sin, same thing. We need to actually let go of this load that's associated with sin. You know, you're bad, BK, you're a bad person, sinner, you're going to go to hell. No problem, we're already in hell, so, you know. And so, you know, of course our vocabulary is changing, but we have to deal with the existing vocabulary, but actually take off that toxic load, that or that charge that is connected with it, so that emotionally we feel completely neutral about the word. See, because toxic conventional morality has made us susceptible to manipulation by that, you see. And we need to be free from that manipulative effect. And therefore, you know, we say sin or we say ice cream, you know, same thing. I mean, of course, for some people it is the same thing, but I mean, tennis ball or, you know, something that's neutral. Because basically all we're really looking at is, which is another subject, enlightened self-interest. Let me do the thoughts, words, and actions which are useful for me. And for me to take sorrow means I permit another person to contaminate my being. And when I am powerful, I don't do that. When I'm not powerful, I let somebody contaminate me, but I also am unable to prevent myself from doing some negative action, you see. So in both cases, it's not about being bad. It's about being weak. And if you say, okay, my problem is I'm weak, so Baba says, hey, I can help you there. I'll give you power. Just take as much as you want. And then you'll be fine. So we say, okay, that's great. This is how sins get removed by yoga. Who needs to suffer? Yeah. Okay, let's look at the movie.
Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay, and I have here in the studio with me today Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. The format of today's show is called Socratic Dialogue, which is the process of eliciting a clear expression of truth by putting questions to another. The purpose of this show is to take a new look at what Sister Denise calls conventional morality, to question, to analyze, to dialogue the value system that the world holds, the human conscience, to look at human conduct and the way we speak, the way we interact with each other, and see whether our way of functioning still works for us, or should we give it up and look at an alternative. Sister Denise, thank you so much for being in the studio with us today. Very, very warm welcome.
Thank you.
Today's topic is a paradigm shift. And from where I'm sitting and looking at simply the news headlines on a global level today, whether it's BBC News or CNN, it is quite obvious that the world has become quite a scary place because of human conduct. And it is getting progressively worse. And the sense in my heart and with many people is that something's got to give. What is your take on that?
Well, we're reaching a point where people are feeling uncomfortable because things can be bad and people say, well, you know, it's been like this from time to time. It's not something out of the ordinary, but more and more people are beginning to say, no, something out of the ordinary is happening, and because of that, we don't really quite know how to think about it, which means we're in an unusual situation.
Okay, and so what paradigm shift, could you explain what exactly is meant by that term?
Well, a paradigm is the way people view the world, what people think reality is. And up until the 1970s, we have been operating on the basis of the materialist view of reality, which means that anything that is physical, perceivable by the five senses or aided by technology, that's real. Anything that is outside of the purview of science doesn't exist. But in the 90s and into the 2000s, theoretical physics began to see that there is something that hadn't been noticed before that, which belies the materialist paradigm, because it says things like, well, there are some particles that seem to know where to go, which is different from the idea of everything is random. It's also been seen that there is the observer effect, which means that if you want an experiment to go a particular way as opposed to a particular other way, you can actually make that happen. So this brings in the idea of the effect of consciousness on material reality. Up until the 70s, people were saying that, well, you know, consciousness is an imaginary thing, or it's an epiphenomenon of the brain, but it's not something outside the purview of matter. But now, theoretical physicists have been doing experiments where they have shown that there are non-material dimensions which seem to have rudimentary elements of consciousness. And so there's a whole new paradigm coming into play that says that the existing paradigm, that there is only matter and it's all random and so on, that is now being shown to be really no longer tenable. And so we're in a point where actually science and spirituality are beginning to find points of convergence, whereas previously they were really an either-or situation, and science was the one that was coming through on top. But now, there's been so many things happening in the world of theoretical physics that say, well, I don't think we can really make those claims anymore. And then so many more experiments about consciousness saying that, no, this looks like there is something here. And so that is really the shift that's happening.
You mentioned earlier that, well, what science teaches us and what is that which we see is real, which begs the question, what is reality? Too white? Okay, if what we see and what we perceive through the senses is not the only thing that is real, what else is real that we need to know about, that humanity does not know about?
Well, now we're able to say that thoughts are things, whereas previously people thought a thought isn't anything at all, so it doesn't matter what you think. Now, you factor in thought into the laws of karma, what you say, what you do, what you think, what atmosphere and vibration you create with your thought, that alters what happens. So it means it's real, but it's very, very difficult to detect because it's not physical reality.
Okay. So, Sister Denise, what shift has to occur? What we're here right now. Where do we have to move to?
I think the place.
And won't it destroy everything that we know, that we hold to be true, once we do make that shift?
It might.
Yeah, isn't that enough to scare anyone not to make the paradigm shift? Because
definitely.
Everyone's comfortable. The world is a scary place, but everyone's very comfortable.
Well, so when it's really bad, but at least you know the really bad, then you don't really want to go into an unknown territory. But I think that there are enough people experimenting and finding things that saying, you know, well, the unknown territory is not perhaps quite as unknown, quite as scary as people make out, and let's go there, let's see what it is, because the way things are at the moment, it's not really comfortable, even though there are some who prefer the comfort zone of the known, even if it's not good. So where we are at the moment is we're saying we are physical bodies, we are physical objects. Where I think we're going is to say that actually we're not physical objects, we are spiritual beings who use the physical object of the human body and all the physical aspects of the physical world in order to experience, to express ourselves, to give meaning in this dimension, but that behind the material dimension there is a spiritual dimension, which is of course alluded to totally by the religions. But the problem with the religions from the angle of the scientists is that it requires a person to have blind faith, because so much of it is a tenet that cannot be explained. And the rational scientific people are not willing to let go of things that can be explained in favor of things that can't be explained. But I think that there is a dawn of an awakening of spirituality where the intangible is becoming possible to explain, so that the rational thinkers of science and the mystically inclined, spiritually inclined people are finding areas where they can actually meet. And this is something very new and very important. And this is really where the paradigm shift can take place.
When I listen to you, it seems so almost inconsequential. I'm a soul, I'm not a body. Wow, big deal. Why is it such a big deal?
Well, there are implications.
Okay, what are the implications? It sounds almost too simple, Sister Denise.
It's
shockingly simple. And yes, it's something that the world has had some intelligent minds. The world has had some deeply religious people. The world has magnificent human beings who understood and known everything. And yet none of them have cottoned on to what you just said.
Well, some of them probably have an understanding of some parts of it, maybe not all of it, definitely, because people are coming from all kinds of different traditions and different angles. But what I would say is that the implication of spirituality is a very big one. That is that I, as an individual, have never not existed. And that there will never be a time when I, as an individual, cease to exist. That's big. That's the implication of spirituality. Then another implication
that
there is a God, there is the God, who is the God of all the religions and so on, who can be known. Otherwise, most of the religions say God is, by definition, unknowable. But now we say, no, God can make himself, herself known to any human being. There are many human beings to whom that has happened and continues to happen. And a God can explain human existence, before life, after death, what happens, the big picture of the origins of the universe, the continuation, and what's next. You know, the information about this is around. And then there are people who say, yes, I can understand this. There are other people who say, this is so different from what I am comfortable with that I choose to deny it, avoid it, ridicule it or whatever, but not take it on board. But the thing is, with such a powerful truth, is it, you know, it has the capacity to persist. It has the capacity to be known by more and more people. And once something is known by more and more people, it's in the airwaves, in the thought waves. And so then it becomes articulated. It becomes represented in literature, in the arts, in people's lives and so on. So it takes on a substance of reality that is, in a sense, competitive with those views that choose to say it doesn't exist, you see, because when something has enough strength within itself to assert its existence, then it becomes undeniable. So God comes from far in the distance of the discarnate, non-perceivable, into the realm of what can be perceived, what can be articulated, and then it becomes something that can be argued for, represented, displayed in different ways.
Is simply the understanding that I am a soul enough to cause the paradigm shift? Okay, if one has this, if one hears your talk and thinks, that's so beautiful, I can buy this quite easily, and then realize, okay, I am a soul. What happens? Is there a consequential shift in behavior, your relationships, the way you speak to others, whether do you suddenly become vegetarian? What happens? Well, is the shift a paradigm shift? Is it just a mental thing, or is it a social thing, a political thing, economic thing? Where is it an individual thing? Is it a collective thing?
I think that the implication and the impact is throughout.
You see.
For example, the idea that a person is a soul and cannot be killed makes war completely meaningless, because every time you kill hundreds of thousands of people, they will reincarnate right away. So why are you doing that? Doesn't make any sense. You see. When you go into the depths of karma, one set of people kill the other side and then they reincarnate on the other side, you know, and it's like, what's going on? War becomes completely meaningless, completely mindless, you see. So then the meaningfulness of human action is based on different principles. The idea that you can destroy a person is based on the materialist paradigm. Once you come into the spiritual paradigm, it is not possible to destroy a being. So if you go around killing people's bodies, well, they'll just get replaced. And it's odd to see that wherever there is killing, there's also raping. Why is there raping? So that all those dead people can reincarnate, but in a state of trauma, which means that the relationships between the warring parties is going to get worse and worse and worse until it becomes unbearably horrible, and then there is a crisis point.
So what is going to be the effect of the paradigm shift on the external? You've discussed now what happens inside, outside, what the effect?
You know,
because from what you're saying, a person's such a huge change in the way you think and perceive yourself will have far-reaching ramifications for
how you relate to your immediate family.
Yes.
Okay. So, what is the end result of this ripple effect?
I think that, you know, people feel that their identity comes from their family, their nationality, their professional activity, and so on. So knowing the self as a soul means I'm an actor. I get born somewhere. I come into relationship with these people. There is karma going on between all these people. And then when this body finishes, I leave these people and go somewhere else according to karma. So the spiritual paradigm means we have to really understand karma, because if we don't, we're going to put ourselves in more and more trouble. And it doesn't have any meaning to do that when we know better. If you don't know, then of course there's nothing you can do. But once you know, then you're responsible, you see. You can't say, oh, well, I don't think I would like to know this anymore. It's too late, you know.
Mm.
You see.
You cannot unring the bell.
That's right. And so that means people really have to do some very deep thinking. What am I doing? How am I responding? How am I reacting? And you really have to really look at the consequences of your actions, the origins, what you're doing now, what's going on. You have to really rethink it. And this is why the spiritual paradigm brings with it a huge study, because the materialist paradigm has meant, well, we just study physics and we study matter, and we study human society as if it is material. But with this, we have to study everything differently, from a different angle, applying different laws, because the paradigm of spiritual reality means you have to take into consideration both the laws of spirituality as well as the laws of matter. Previously, all you had to take into consideration is the laws of matter. But the fact that things didn't work out implies something's missing. So what's missing? The spiritual component. So the spiritual paradigm doesn't say, okay, we'll get rid of matter. Not at all. It says that matter and spirit have to work together. When you deny the spiritual component, then matter and spirit are working in opposition, which is very harmful and disastrous.
Mm. So, on that note, what then is your relationship to matter if there is a paradigm shift like the one you just described? How do you relate to your body? And what happens to your responsibilities?
Well, your body is your instrument, so you have to take care of it, but you do not become it. You are not it. It is a belonging, and it is temporary. So you cannot be attached to it. You cannot be emotionally involved with it, but you have to be responsible for it. You cannot look in the mirror and say, I am really ugly, you see. You look in the mirror and say, okay, this is the condition of my body, but I am a beautiful soul. And that changes the vibration, because the body is very much affected by the vibration which is put out by the thoughts of the soul, because souls think, souls act through the body.
Hold on, say that again. The body is affected by the vibration of
the soul.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, that means if you are very body conscious, you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, this is me, you're always going to find fault with it, because you're interested in being beautiful. And you say, oh, I've got this wrinkle and this spot and this whatever. But in soul consciousness, you say, okay, this is a condition of my vehicle, and I am a beautiful being, and I have love for my vehicle, but I am not my vehicle, so I will take care of it very well. it will serve me well. It is not me. You know, it changes the relationship. And then when you look at another person, you're not going to look at them as their body. You're going to look through the body and see the person who is within. When somebody dies, you're going to know that the soul has moved on, and these are the remains, so you get rid of it, but you do not get caught up in the remains of a person, because your relationship is with the soul, not the body.
Mm. So, is there anything else that you would like to add before we bring today's show to an end?
I think the implications are that there is no way that a person can avoid facing the consequences of their actions.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of live now, pay later changes altogether.
Mm-hmm.
If a person does something good, no matter what, they will get the reward of that sooner or later. And so you don't have to look for results. You just know they will come in their own right time.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone wants to do negative action, thinking that they can get away with it, not possible.
Mm.
You can get away with it for a while, but only for a while. Even if you commit suicide to avoid facing things, you'll immediately reincarnate and you will have to deal with it. So there is no way out. Really develop powers.
Okay, there is no way out. Sister Denise, I think that brings us to the end of today's show. And it's very interesting. You see, the ideas that you shared today are so simple that it has escaped humanity forever, which I find so bizarre. To have something that's so simple and can literally shift everything about the way we think and feel and behave towards ourselves and each other can be summed up in one line. You are soul. Ladies and gentlemen, you are a soul. And that is the message that Sister Denise has shared in essence. And the last line of Sister Denise's talk, I think, captures the entire half an hour. There is no way out. And those words necessarily imply that at some point every single one of us has to take stock of our lives, look at who we really are, make peace with what we've become, relook at our relationships, matter, everything in our lives, and also be aware that we have to make peace with reality. Yeah, that was the deepest message for me in today's talk. So, Denise, thank you very much for your beautiful words. And those of you at home who enjoyed today's talk, there's more to come, and we hope to see you soon. We also hope that which Sister Denise shared is not just a nice idea to you. You take it, you practice it, and you see if it works for you. If it does, you will also share this with your friends and family. Thank you very much for your time today, and we will see you soon.
Om Shanti. So I hope that was useful. There's quite a few of those that take up various bits and pieces of the whole question of virtues, values, ethics, and morality. What I think I'd like us to do now is take a break. And if you'd like to come back by 11:30, that gives you 25 minutes. Is that good? And then I think that I would like to have you do some written exercises. So if you, when you come back, if you can make sure you have your notebook and pencil with you, and we'll take it to the next step. And we'll also have a lot of time for question answer interaction and so on. Okay, so see you in more or less 25 minutes. Okay, Om Shanti. Om Shanti. So we had some entertainment, now we have to do some work. And I would like to have you, first of all, for about 15 minutes, divide up into groups of 3, 4, 5, however you feel, and just discuss among yourselves this question: how has conventional morality failed us? Because what I'm trying to do with you is to convince you to give up your values, your morality, and your ethics. That part of it which comes from the conventions, that comes from how you were raised as children, that comes from the society, the Iron Age society. Because we have to take, in a way, a big risk to let go of something that we feel is really, really solid and good and right, so that we can catch hold of something else. And so you have to be a little bit like the trapeze artist. Have you ever tried trapezing? You're swinging on this thing, and at one point you have to jump and catch hold of a different one. And you may be 100 feet above the ground, so you might fall down. So that's such a risk, you know. But this is what I'm trying to get you to do, because even though it's extremely scary and highly risky and all that, you can't have something and its opposite at the same time. And so what I feel is that we have to be able to be clear inside us that all of this conventional morality and ethics and values that we received from the external moral authorities, maybe some of it is good, but it's so mixed up with bits that are bad that it's better to get rid of the whole thing. So, for example, if you have poison mixed with water plus a bit of sugar, it's still poison. You know, so we have to actually empty the glass with all the poison, all the sugar, all the water, and put up a clean new glass with new stuff that's not poisonous, right? Because with the poison we get sick, even if it's got some sugar in it, because it's mixed. So the risky thing I'm going to ask you to do is just give up everything and start from zero. And of course, there'll be many things that you say, okay, yeah, we'll be nice to people, that's good, you know, we'll be sweet, that's good. But, you know, all this stuff is really Baba's stuff. And there are some good things mixed in with the toxic conventional morality, but if we just feel courageous enough to take our glass and just empty it out, rinse it out in good hot water, wipe it dry, and start again. So the process involves, first of all, having a chit-chat with each other about how you feel conventional morality has failed us. Is that okay? And then afterwards I'm going to ask you to do some writing. So let's discuss that till about 12, okay, by this clock. So group of 3, group of 4, group of 5, however you want. Om Shanti. Okay, let's come back to our spots. Did you enjoy discussion? Did you find conventional morality has failed us or not failed us? Failed? Okay, we're on the same page. Good. So, I would like you to do some soul searching. And I have three questions that I'd like you to write down. And then take some time to write about one of them, or all of them if you want, but one of them at least. So you have notebook and pen. So the first question is, what double standards exist in my life, even as a Brahmin? That means you have one law for you, and there's a different law for everybody else. That's one of the problems. And so it means it's okay for me to do this, 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 and this, but it's not okay for anybody else to do it. That's double standards. So as a Brahmin, what we're trying to do is, you know, the same on the inside, the same on the outside, and whatever other laws, they apply to me just as well as everybody else. But in conventional morality, we have a system of double standards that for me, it's okay. I don't have to get up at Amrit Vela. But everybody else should. Because I've got my reasons. And I don't have to be all that vegetarian. I can be a bit vegetarian. But everybody else has to be properly vegetarian. But I have good reasons, you know. And so it's a lot of excuse making and justification and things like that. So this is the first question. What double standards exist in my life, even though I'm a Brahmin? Okay, the second question is a little bit different. What prejudices do I still maintain, even as a Brahmin? So what kind of prejudices we might have? Okay, so the second question is, what prejudices do I still maintain, even as a Brahmin? So, example of a prejudice is cultural prejudice. Wherever you say them for another group of BKs, the Indians, the English people, the South Americans, the Chinese, the Africans, you know, wherever we say them, that means there's a prejudice. And so do we still do that? If so, write it down. And do you want to continue with that? You may have prejudice against, you know, people who live in centers. You may have prejudice against people who don't live in centers. You know, any time where you say them and us, there's some sort of prejudice. Because in BK, it's all us. Right? Or you might have prejudice against people who have mental illness. Or people who have cosmetic surgery. Or people who have tattoos. Or whatever, you know. So, that's the second question. The third question is, what is my attitude towards people who do wrong? Are you a finger-wagging type? Or are you talk about them to the other people? What do you do? What is your attitude? Okay? So you can write down a few points on all of those questions, or just on one of them, whichever you feel. But definitely do some soul searching and write down what's going on with you in one, two, or all three of these areas. Okay? And we will carry on with that until 20 past 12 by this clock, because I know how many of you are planning to go back to Pandabhavan. That's quite a lot of you. Okay, so you want to take the 12:30 bus. So we'll finish that writing at 12:20. All these clocks are a bit slow, so you won't miss the bus. This, my clock, says 12:06, so you've got a good 5 minutes extra. Okay, so, Om Shanti. Om Shanti. So, do you find that some percentage you are still dedicated to toxic conventional morality? So this is the thing. So this afternoon, in order to make it easy for you to come on the bus, we'll start at 4:15, so you can take the 4 o'clock bus. Is that okay? And then we'll go further with all this, because we have to find a way to remove the chains that are tying us up, keeping us partly in the world of Baba and partly in the world of Maya, where Maya is not you're a bad person, but Maya is, you know, they have power over me and I don't like that, right? Is that true? They have power over me means all these external moral authorities. Because it's very difficult to say, I don't agree. Isn't it? I'm not going to deal in the currency of people's defects anymore. You know, end of conversation, you know. Because so much of it is about all that. So, this is a kind of a chart that you're doing, which is going to really help you to get free from these ways that are not your habits, but that, Paramat invades your spirit, contaminates it, and then you've been infected, and you've got the flu of that stuff. And so this is sort of antibiotic, spiritual antibiotic or something like that. Yeah? Did you enjoy writing? Did you have much to say? Yes? That's good. Just before we separate, is there anyone who would like to share any insight that you had during this morning? Was it useful? Useful? Yes? So, anybody want to share anything? No? Okay, one brother, come. You can take my mic. Or he'll bring you another mic.
I come to the question of how much power do they have over me, or how much power do I give them?
That's a very good question. Did everybody understand that? How much power do they have over me? Or how much power do I give them?
That's the state I'm in at the moment.
So do you have the answer to the question?
No, because it's different every time.
Yeah, yeah. So did you all understand that? It was a very, very good question to write down. And ask yourself that question. How much power do they have over me? And how much power do I give them? Thank you. Okay, so let's have a couple minutes meditation, and then I will see you back here at 4:15. Yeah? Om Shanti.